Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
The Coronas are an Irish rock band that originated in Dublin. They release their music by their own independent record label, 3U Records, and are based between Dublin and London. They have released 7 studio albums, Heroes or Ghosts in 2007, Tony Was an Ex-Con in 2009, Closer to You in 2011, The Long Way in 2014, Trust the Wire in 2017, True Love Waits in 2020, and Time Stopped in 2022. Their latest album, Thoughts and Observations, is released in September of 2024. Tony Was an Ex-Con received the Best Irish Album at the 2010 Meteor Awards. In the ever-evolving landscape of the modern music industry, the Coronas have continued to independently thrive without sacrificing their creative vision along the way. A multi-platinum group who can claim supporting Bruce Springsteen in Hyde Park, playing for President Biden, and a burgeoning global fan base. The Coronas' last 3 albums also went straight to number 1 in the Irish charts, with recent sold-out tours in their wake spanning North America and Australia, further showcasing the trio's successful and ever-growing legacy. Renowned for their magnetic live shows, having also been previously voted as the number 1 live act of the year by Hot Press, the Coronas have been headlining their own shows and festivals in Ireland for almost 15 years. With their regular Christmas performances at the Olympia Theatre in Dublin becoming the stuff of legends. The band consists of Danny O'Reilly on vocals, piano and guitar, Graham Knox on bass, and Connor Egan on drums. Up next on Celebsvant, we've got Danny O'Reilly from the Coronas.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm great, thanks, Barrett. I'm here in Dublin at the moment. We're doing a lot of promo for the album that's coming out in September, and we're very excited to get back to Australia in November. It should be a lot of fun. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Very good. And just a note that you need to add South Africa also onto your list of destinations.
I'd love to. I've never been, Barrett, and I've heard it, a good friend of mine got married there, and I couldn't make it, and all my friends went just a few years ago, and, yes. And they had a ball. I've heard it's such a beautiful country, but no, the Coronas have never managed to play there, but hopefully one day.
Yes.
I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Absolutely. So we'll hear more about the new album and the tour, especially Australia, coming up shortly. Mm. Now, why the name The Coronas? Where does that come from?
Yeah, initially we were named after an old typewriter. It's called the Corona Smith Deluxe, one of those old vintage typewriters. So when we started the band a good few years ago now, the beer Corona Extra wasn't that famous, not in Ireland anyway, and definitely there was no unfortunate named virus knocking around then as well. So
yes.
we picked the name and it stuck, and it's been an interesting last few years for sure with COVID and all that stuff happening, but we've been called the Corona since our
yes.
first album back in 2007. Yeah, so it's been a wild journey.
Not making light of anything, but when the pandemic was happening, did you guys not get more traction for the sense that people were Googling Corona and your guys' bands were coming up a lot, surely?
Yeah, initially we were like, oh my God, are we going to have to change our band name or what?
Yes.
You know, it was almost had a negative connotation and we were nervous, and, you know, we were just, it was such a strange time for everyone in our industry anyway. But to add that extra layer of strangeness with our band name, it was weird. But as you say, definitely, I mean, we were getting requests from like BBC and NBC to do interviews because they wanted a segment on their show that was like, you know, oh, the music industry is in a lot of trouble, but it's worse for this band. Wait until you see who we have after the break, you know.
Oh, really? Did they take it on that angle? It wasn't worse for you guys because you were getting a lot of publicity, so you're out of it. So.
Exactly. Well, initially when it first happened, we sort of said, oh no, we don't want to do that sort of thing. But then when we released an album in the middle of COVID, we had it ready to go anyway. And then we were just like, why not? Let's just get the promo and talk about our unfortunate
yes.
band name. And and as you say, A lot of people have said to me in since then that they discovered us over that time, and something came up in their Spotify about Corona, and they just checked us out or whatever. So yeah, I think it's helped. Maybe it's helped. Our definitely our Spotify numbers have gone up, but I like to think that's because we've been releasing good music. It's not because of
Absolutely.
that, you know.
Absolutely. That's a byproduct of it. It's all about the music,
Exactly.
completely. Okay, so
Exactly.
let's rewind. At what age
Yeah.
did you feel cool? You want to be in the creative music space, whether it was a child or teenager, and how did that journey progress and meeting of the rest of the band and the band's journey? So the overall hybrid journey of yourself and then with the band.
Yeah, well, I mean, I grew up around music. My mother is a singer as well. She's a folk singer called Mary Black, and she's toured the world and on the sort of folk scene. So I sort of grew up around it, and I was always very comfortable at venues, and I used to watch her play, and I'd see her and my dad. My dad was her manager, and I'd see them at home, and I think just sort of subconsciously, it sort of connected with me a bit in that they liked their job. They were always working, and they were always, it never seemed like work, that sort of way. So I think that definitely stuck with me. My mom also encouraged me to write songs from an early age because she was an interpreter of other people's songs, and she would record old folk songs and other songwriter songs. And I think she always wished, I think, that she had written songs from an early age. So I started writing songs quite early. And so I think deep down, I knew it was what I wanted to do. I probably didn't admit it out loud anyway until I was maybe in college or maybe my late teens or whatever. And that's when I was like, no, this is really what I want to do. But I mean, the band, we've been friends our whole lives. Like, so Noxie, our bass player, I met when I was a baby. Like, our parents were friends. So they hung out, and we were the same age, and we were hanging out from when we were toddlers. Like, and Connor, our drummer, was in the same school as me as well. So we've been together probably before we could even play instruments. And I think that sort of stood to our longevity. We were friends first, and then we said, okay, let's start a band, and we've gone on this journey together, and we're still friends. Touch wood. I still like them anyway.
Yes.
Hopefully they still like me.
No, I'm sure they do. Okay, so when you started, decided to guys got together and thought, cool, let's start a band. Did you think that it would have at that time the longevity that it's had, the success that it's had, or was it like, okay, let's just go with the flow?
Yeah, we always set sort of mini ambitions, like that were just a couple of years ahead of us. Like, there's a big festival in Ireland called Electric Picnic, and that was on our bucket list of trying to play at that festival. We would take any slot, and there's a famous venue in Dublin that's only small. It's 500 capacity, called Whelan's, but like Nirvana and stuff played there. And to us, it was like, if we could headline that venue, that would be amazing. And then we did that, and then the goalposts change, and you go, okay, well, now what? And you go, well, wouldn't it be great to do two nights in this venue? Or, what about that venue down the road? And, so we kept taking baby steps forward with the Coronas, and I think that's also key to our longevity. Our first album came out, and we were sort of an independent band, and it was a word of mouth thing, and we just built up through the venues, and we started to tour, and we learned as we were going. And it wasn't until our third record that we actually signed to a major label, and we moved to London and signed to Island Records, and that sort of kicked us on and another step forward, and then we started touring a lot more outside Ireland and outside Europe, and even that is still growing for us. I mean, like, our tour last year in Australia was the biggest we had done, and we got to play in the Enmore Theatre in Sydney, which is just such a historic venue. And again, I've been told that the tickets are going really well for this tour as well. So, and it's the same in America and in Europe. It's just like baby steps and growing, and we still love it. We love being on the road, and we're not as young as we used to be. The industry has changed, and it's things like TikTok and are now important, and that wasn't around when we started. Our first album came out in 2007, and it was still physical sales, never mind downloads or
Yes.
streaming or TikTok, So it's been interesting to see the industry evolve. But for us, we always consider ourselves a live act first and foremost, and we always toured, we always played live, and almost the albums were sort of to support our live show, and recording and releasing music was never our sort of main, I suppose, financial in income. It was all from our live shows, and
Okay.
as I say, we considered ourselves a live band, and thankfully we've gotten to do it, and for 15 years or so since. So it's yeah, it's been a great journey, and as I say, we still love it. We still really enjoy it.
Okay, so a bunch of points that you mentioned that I want to unpack
Yeah,
and discuss. First of
sure.
all, so when you got those bucket list moments, those tick off the
Yeah.
bucket list, at the time it was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Did you take the time for you guys to recognize of the achievements, or was it, okay, now what's the next thing?
That's a very good question. I think in the early days, I definitely got caught up in what's next, what's next, what's next, looking at other bands and not taking the time to appreciate it as much, especially when we moved to London and signed a big record deal with Island. And I got a bit caught up in radio play and what are we doing, and looking at Coldplay, what are Coldplay doing, looking at the other bands, the Irish bands like Snow Patrol, what are they doing, and and trying to judge ourselves off that. And it was only, I think, it maybe when I turned 30 that I sort of realized, I think the band got a couple of knocks, a couple of things happened with the band. Our guitar player left and we sort of had a refocusing, I suppose, of what we wanted. And really, since then, I've been much more present and been able to enjoy all the moments that, as you say, you tick things off and be present for them, And I remember thinking back to some of our big shows in the early days. Don't get me wrong, I always enjoyed playing live, and I always enjoyed the journey of being in a band. But I definitely think I didn't quite appreciate it at the time, and I was always straight away looking at the next thing and
Yes.
never just took a moment to be present and go, this is cool, and trying to enjoy it in the moment. And we do that now, and I'm sure to do it now. And even last month we got to tour America, and we had some great shows, and we really had a few moments where we're like, you know what, this is great, like, and this is what it's all about. And I always have to remind myself that, if you compare yourself to other people, and I'm sure it's the same in the podcasting game, as long as you're doing something that makes you happy and fulfills you, that is success more than anything. Like I always say, there's no guarantee that Chris Martin from Coldplay is happier than I am just because his
Exactly.
band are more successful and
Yes.
they're the biggest band in the world. But we had success in the early days when we signed to Island, and we were probably one of the biggest Irish bands, but I wasn't as happy as I am now, and I think, success comes from appreciating what you're doing and enjoying the process, and just having balance in your life and everything. And that's more successful, I think, than just being super, selling millions of records and selling out arenas and not having a second to even enjoy it,
It's true. I mean, you mentioned reference, observing others in the same space. So when I've started the podcast, everyone says, oh, you must watch this one. You must watch that one. You must watch people doing the same thing. And at the time I decided no, because I'm very much a person that thinks, okay, well, now I need to do that. And that, in inverted commas, is not my personality. So it takes away my inauthenticity. Authenticity. So in fact, I didn't do any what people suggested. I just dived in. So, and it's sometimes hard, but sometimes like, oh, why have they got more listeners than me? How did they get that guess? And I pull myself back. I was like, no, this is my journey. That's theirs. So I hear
Exactly,
what you're saying.
exactly.
Exactly.
100%. And that's such a good attitude to have, because there is always someone that you can compare yourself to. And I'm sure Bono or you in U2 is looking at the Beatles, or there's literally no stopping it. You can keep going forever. And
Yeah.
that's the interesting thing about what I was talking about, our little ambitions earlier on. The goalposts can continue to move. As I said, we had an ambition to play at a festival, to headline a show. As soon as we got that, I was like, well, what's next? What's next? And you're never happy. So,
Yeah.
if you put your happiness on these things, these ambitions, these goals, and it's like, if I get that, then I'll be happy, then you achieve that, and it's the same, so you have to enjoy the journey. And that's what we've learned over the years, and it tends to be better quality, I find, as well. Especially I've found in the creative space, when I don't think, like what you're saying about your podcast, not listening to other people, when I don't think about, oh, are people going to like this when I'm writing? The crowd might like if I do this sort of thing because
Yes.
that's cool and that's what acts are doing at the moment and the production wise and stuff. But if I just try and please myself, I think Rick Rubin, the producer, has that mantra. It's like, you only have to impress one person, and that's yourself. You don't have to think about anyone else. And I'm sure it's the same in the podcast game. If you like what content you're creating, then that's all that counts, and everything else beyond that is a bonus. And as long as you're happy with that, and as I say, I've learned that over the years for sure.
And are you guys still signed to the record, or are you independent again now?
We have our own label now
Okay.
in Ireland, which is great, and then we license out the album to different labels overseas, and
Okay.
it's great because when we were signed with Island, you know, it was amazing. They gave us a big advance. It's a big record label. It has Mumford & Sons and Hozier and, you know, all these big acts. But when something doesn't go well, you're like, oh, the label should have done this, and they didn't promote us the way they promoted that other band, and you have them to blame. But when you start your own label, which we did in the last couple of albums, you've only got yourself to blame if something doesn't go right. So it sort of made us work harder, I think,
Yes.
and made us focus in a bit more. And the good thing is the four of us, the three of us in the band and our manager Jim, we all have our own strengths, and we've delegated what we're good at. Like Noxy, for example, our bass player, is sort of in charge of our socials and does a lot of the online stuff and merchandise and design and stuff. I would do a lot of the interviews, like I'm chatting to you now, and also I'm the main songwriter. Connor, our drummer, is more of our stage manager, so he
Yeah.
puts together the live shows and the backing tracks and what you know what needs to be sorted for playing live, and then our manager Jim is really the overall sort of manager of the label as well as the band, and sort of helps with the promo and puts the teams in place, and you know, and that's how we ended up chatting to you today, because he hired a great PR team in
Yes.
Australia on the map, who are doing great work for us,
Yes.
and so it's all about delegating and making things happen. So we found the last couple of years when we started our own label, it's been a lot of fun, and as I say, we then licensed the album out overseas, and it's worked for us, thank God.
And do you have any other artists on your label on the label? It's just you guys.
Just us at the moment, but
Okay.
we do have ambition to maybe down the road, we hope that the label might outlast the band, you know, that sort of way. And we've learned a lot. I think Ireland is a small enough country where you can do it yourself if you're lucky enough like us to have a following, which we did after our first couple of albums and after having the big record deal. We had a core group of loyal followers, like, and so we were selling tickets. So that was sort of financing the record label side of things, and so we've been able to manage doing that, as I say, and the key thing is hiring the right people and getting people to help you, and that's what we've learned over the years. But as I say, no, we've no other acts at the moment, but we're open to it. I suppose we're waiting to find the act that you can't ignore. You know,
Yes.
not just someone that you think is good, but someone where you go, I have to do this. And
Yes.
I think that will happen eventually. I'm sure. I hope it does, because as I say, we have a bit of an expertise, especially in Ireland here. We know the industry and how it works with radio and stuff. And I think if the right act comes along, we would do it. But no, at the moment we've been too busy. You know, the last tr we've had three albums on our own label, and all three of them have gone to number one in Ireland. So we have a 100% strike rate.
Yes.
We have only released, in fact, we did a bit of research. No, we didn't. We just are calling ourselves the most successful record label of all time, because
Yes.
every single album we've released has gone to number one, even
Well, there
though
we go. You
it's
have to
only three.
do it, and then it will be that. Say it as a step
Exactly.
into. I love it. Okay,
Exactly.
so tell us about the new album.
Yeah, it's called Thoughts and Observations. It's coming out on September 27th. We are extremely proud of it. It was written probably mainly last year. We had a little bit of a break after touring our previous album, and I sort of relocated to the southwest corner of Ireland in a beautiful place called Dingle, County Kerry, and I set up my studio and really got the guts of the album together there, and then came back and worked with the band and worked with a couple of producers and co-writers that I write with. And then we went to London in January and recorded it with an amazing producer called George Murphy, who's done Mumford and Sons albums. He's worked with Ellie Goulding, The Specials, and just loads of amazing people. And he's such a great guy. We've worked with him for a couple of years now. And we put the album together and we recorded it old school, just went in and did it start to finish in 3 weeks. And it was a lot of fun, a lot of fun. We lived in London when we signed with Island Records, so we know it. We know the city, and it was nice to head back there in January and get stuck into the album, and now we've just been gearing up to release it since. And yeah, as I say, we're really proud of it. There's a couple of songs that have already come out and are getting a great reaction, and we've been playing some of the songs live. And as I said to you earlier, we consider ourselves a live act more than anything, and the song's been going down great. We have there we're our shows are full of energy, and it's all about the crowd and sing
Yeah.
along moments and arms in the air. And so we've had a lot of fun at playing some of the new songs, and we hope to play more of them in November when we make it back to Oz.
This is an interesting thought that just came into my brain. When you guys are looking for a producer, yes, you mentioned you've collaborated with George for a couple of albums or a couple of projects. But when an established actor, obviously it'll come from your perception and your experiences and your journey. But when an established act is looking for a producer, do you guys always look for someone that's got credentials who's worked with, like you said, other artists? Or has it ever crossed your mind, well, let's try someone new?
It has. We've worked with a young Irish producer on our last album called Cormac Butler, and he hadn't done too much, but a couple of things I'd heard, and we met him, and there was a nice vibe from him, and we said, let's try this. And we did probably two songs off our previous record with him, and that was great, and it was really good. So I wouldn't say we're only looking at their CV, but it does tend to be where we start. I mean, for example, with this album, we wanted to get this mixer who I love. There's two bands in the world that I'm really obsessed with. One of them is an Aussie band called Gang of Youths,
Yes.
who I really, really like, and another is an American band called The National, who I love. And I literally just started Googling who had mixed their albums, because I just loved the sound of those records, and I thought it would suit us. And I found this guy Peter Kadis, and he has won a Grammy. And I was like, this guy is never going to respond to my email. Found an email for him, and just mailed him. And I was like, hi Peter, I'm in a band. I love your stuff. You're an amazing mixer, and I was wondering, would you be up for mixing our stuff? And he knew that we were an independent band doing our own thing, and I think he might have given us a little bit of a discount, because I didn't think we'd be able to afford him. But he came on board, and he mixed the album, and so it is things like that where you look at, listen to other things, and just Google names,
Yes.
and like I used to think that only a record label could make that happen. Only a major record label could go and track down a producer or a mixer. But really, they're all people. You could just find people's
Exactly.
information online, and you send them a mail and go, this is what I'm about, this is what I'm doing, have you got any time? And thankfully, Peter came on board and mixed this entire album, and I think it's our best sounding album. He's amazing at what he does. And so yeah, it was great. And I've never even met him. He lives in Cincinnati, and we've only spoken on the phone,
Okay.
and I've never met him. Yeah, but we're playing in New York. Yes, exactly. We're playing in New York in November. Before we go to Australia, actually, we have a show in New York, and he said he's going to come down, so we'll get to meet him, and I'll get to thank him, and I might even get one of these things for him and give it to him, because hopefully our album will do well, and I'll have something to thank him with and give him some sort of
No, so
some sort of token.
not hopefully. It will be the fourth
Yeah.
number one for your album, so continue the
Fingers
100%
crossed.
strike of success.
That's the
But the story that you mentioned, it's just a reminder to me is that a lot of my friends laugh because a lot of people think that when someone's like has done more, has greater CV or whatever, they perceive them as being on a higher level and not approachable. So they're like, oh no, we can't speak to them, we can't reach out to them because it just can't be done. And the mind and the story that I always tell myself is that, you know what? We all use two-ply toilet paper. No one's got gold-plated toilet paper. So the same way I speak to you is the same way I teach spinning. So it's the same way I speak to my spinning participants, the same way I speak to the checkout lady. Everyone uses two-ply. There's no gold-plated. So it's always just that reminder, go speak to the person. What's the worst thing that could happen? They'll say, no, sorry, not interested. Then you just step away. And that's the end of that. At least
100%.
You give yourself the opportunity and chance to put yourself out there.
Exactly. That's a great answer to have, and you're dead right. It's so true. Everyone's on their own little journey, and you just, what harm? What harm if you the worst attitude is to say, oh no, I can't do that. I could. They would never respond to me, or they would never. You never know what'll happen. So yeah, that's the right attitude, I think.
Okay, so now you referenced earlier the creator process that you went to that area in Ireland or Dublin, and you built it together, and then the rest of the process is now your creator. Is that generally how you guys always create? Is that the process, or has it changed over time?
It's definitely changed over time. In the early albums, I suppose it was the music of the time that was influencing us as well, was a bit more acoustic guitar led, and bands like the Kooks and the Killers and Kings of Leon, and they were the bands we were listening to. And so I would write songs probably more so on the acoustic guitar, maybe get them a bit to about 75% finished, and bring them to the band, and we would arrange them and finish them off and work them out and parts and all that. And but over the years it's gone a bit more where I'll do a little bit more on the laptop. And although in saying that, with this batch of songs, we really wanted to make them sound good with just the three of us in the room. So I'm not a whiz producer anyway. I can do a little bit. I've done some production, but I'm not, by any stretch of the imagination, I wouldn't call myself a producer. I do demos on the laptop. And but with this album, we wanted it to sound real, and I had a big bunch of songs that we had demoed, but the ones we picked were the ones that sounded good with just the three of us in the room, just playing, looking at each other acoustically. And if the songs held up in that format, we would pick those songs, and if they still
Yes.
sounded good, because you can always throw all the bells and whistles at it, you can have the best producer in the world, but if they don't sound good acoustically, if there isn't a good song and a good emotion at the core of it, then it's not worth it anyway. So as in answer to your question, yeah, I've evolved over the years. Initially it was more acoustic guitar, then I started writing a lot more on piano, and then I started writing a lot more sort of on laptops and production-y sort of demos. But now more recently I'm almost going back to, or at least making sure, as I say, that they sound good acoustic, you know?
Okay, so you referenced this earlier, and I was quite ex I have this discussion with everyone or performers and singers that I interact with, and I'd love your observation and thoughts on it. So I love me a CD. I love the aesthetic of the holding of something. I love the journey of the choice, the ex experience of the receiving, unpacking the booklet, listening from song one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware, you may be. I'm sure you do if you have your own label that. Vinyls back up 5.9 million sales last year alone in the UK, the biggest since 1990. Cassettes, even, can you believe, are back up. And CDs. So I was reading an article earlier on in the year that the UK has a basket of products that they use to gauge for tax purposes. And vinyl has been in the basket for the longest time. But now, because of the upsurge of CDs again, that product is now back in the basket that they're gauging for tax purposes. So all of those are on the upskill. And it's actually not the older nostalgic people are buying. It's actually the teenagers and the younger kids. But then we also have the streaming platforms that people consume music on. Your observations and the perceptions of the landscape at the moment.
Yeah, it's a great question, because it's an ever evolving thing. Like, our first album came out in 2007, and it was physical CDs then. I mean, we were only just out of school, and we recorded an album, and it was we were selling physical CDs, and then it adjusted, then moved to downloads, and people were downloading albums on iTunes, or even illegally before that on Napster or whatever. And then it slowly moved to the streaming, and TikTok is now a big thing, a big thing that we have to force ourselves to try and do something on, because we're a man band now that has been around for 15 years or so. So that sort of stuff doesn't come easy to us, but you gotta adjust a little bit with the label, what or with the times and with the industry, but also still being true to yourself. And we've learned that over the years. So we're on our TikTok, you're not going to see us doing dances or whatever, but you
Yes,
might
I'm not
see a
sure.
little bit of, you might see some behind the scenes stuff or
Yes.
whatever stuff that's happening backstage or whatever. But so it's using all the tools to your advantage.
Yeah.
But I am the same as you. I love vinyl. I love the physical CD, and that's the good thing about having our own label, is we can spend a lot of time making sure we get that stuff right, regardless of the fact that vinyl, as you say, is coming back, and it is important. But we love spending time on the design, and literally how it feels, how it opens up, whether we put the lyrics on it, where the thank yous go, how do we design the inside cover, and what color is the vinyl going to be, and everything, So all of those things we do take an interest in, and that's the good thing about having your own label, is that you can do that. But yeah, it is crazy the way the industry has changed. And I think for us, we're lucky in that our sort of financial aspect of income was always our live. So
Yes.
we never really made loads of money from album sales, even back in the day. So the fact that artists maybe don't get too much of a cut of Spotify or whatever is a pity, but it wasn't like our livelihood was dependent on CD sales or vinyl sales anyway. So our live shows are always the thing to keep us going, and thank God we still sell a lot of tickets in Ireland and sell some tickets overseas as well. So we get to tour like, but yeah, it is interesting the way the industry has evolved, and I think it will continue to evolve. You know, there'll be the next thing in the next couple of years, and I think you just have to be open to it and try and sort of pivot, I suppose, while still being yourself and still doing what feels right for you, and not getting too caught up in, you know, oh, everyone is doing this streaming thing and everyone's doing this TikTok thing. We got to do this. And you've got to be able open to slight changes, as I say, pivot, but not get caught up in it, because I don't think that's creatively useful, you know? So it's one of those things where you have to be aware of what's going on, but we're just very thankful that, as I say, that it is live, that hasn't changed. And post pandemic, we were worried that that might change. We were like, will there ever be mass gatherings again? Like, because maybe the whole thing is going to shift and maybe you won't have 2,000 people standing at a show, you know? But thankfully that came back quicker than it even went away. It was so amazing how people just moved on and forgot. And, you know, once they got out there, and I think there'll always be a demand for live music. I think that's the key, and that's the thing that I suppose keeps me from getting too cynical about the industry. There seems to just always be a demand for live music. People want that experience, and it doesn't matter if you give away music for free or you can see the best concert. I could Google the best concert ever right now of my favorite band, watch it on my laptop, but it's not going to be the same as watching it and being there. And that experience is what people pay for, and that's why people continue to buy tickets, and hopefully they'll continue to buy some for us too.
Okay, so I've got a point of discussion around this. I'm normally that guy that's right in front, dancing and jamming, doing my thing, having fun. I'll take my cell phone out for a couple of photos, a couple of videos, and then I'll put it away. But I notice a lot of people around me will have their cell phone out for the longest time. I mean, I was at a concert a couple of months ago, and the three people in front of me, they had their phones out the whole time, and literally the head was cut off, but they were just still filming this the thing. So from the person on the stage perceivably seeing a bunch of phones, do you feel it takes away from that connection, that interaction with the audience, or it's just where society is?
I think, personally, I agree with you. I think it takes away from their experience of it. If I was at a show, I'd be the same as you. I'd take a quick picture or a quick video of a little snippet, but I would my phone would be away. I want to enjoy it. I want to really be present and feel it. But I would never be one also on stage to say, put your phones away. I've heard of bands doing that, and no, that's just the way life is. And who am I to tell someone who's bought a ticket that, no, you got to put your phone away for the whole entire show? That's their experience. If they want to do that, maybe they're live streaming, maybe they actually are the type of person who actually records a video and then watches it again at home. Because that's the thing, people post like whatever 15 seconds of a video. But I think if you record a load of videos on your phone of a gig, do you really go home and watch it all again? Like, it's going to sound terrible through the phone. It's, you know, I think people record and then don't actually watch it. But as I say, I would never be one to tell the crowd. And even things like talking and stuff like that, like, our crowds are quite lively and we encourage people to sing along and dance and just get into it and do whatever they want. And oftentimes, you know, we'll have a quiet song in the set, and there might be a couple of people talking down the back, and I would never be one to tell them to be quiet. Like, I try and find tricks to get their attention, which I picked up over the years. Like, you know, I might tell them a story about the song, or, you know, or say it's the first time we've ever played it live, even if it's not, you know, to get their attention, you know. And there is different ways that you can do that, but I would never go, shh, or stop talking because this is our emotional ballad. Like, you know, people who buy tickets, that's their experience, and you have to adjust to give everyone the best show and try your best to entertain everyone there. And that's something that we've learned over the years as well. And you pick up little tricks, and And we often change our set list to venue on venue, even country on country. Like, for example, in Australia, when we go to Australia, there'll be a lot of expat Irish people there who have emigrated from a few years ago. And if they come to the show, they'll probably know some of our earlier stuff.
Yes.
You know, they were in Ireland when our first couple of albums came out, and then they moved
Yeah.
to Australia. But when we tour America, for example, they don't really know our earlier stuff, and they only know our more recent albums. So we will adjust the set list for them. And we get a great kick of creating a set list to suit the crowd and to suit the venue, because sometimes we'll play a big venue and certain songs will work, big, loud rock songs. But if you're playing in a smaller club, like sometimes we do, and you know, the big, loud, bombastic sound might just be a bit much. Like,
Yeah,
and you can
exactly.
actually play some more quiet things and get a bit more intimate and talk to
Yeah.
the crowd more. That's the other thing about the huge shows. You can't really have a full-on discussion with the crowd. You know, you can say thank you, it's great to be here, and go next song, but you can't really tell a story because you'll lose some of them. But in a smaller venue, you can do that. So there are things that we pride ourselves on that we've gotten better at over the years, just in the show for different size crowds, different size venues, and as I say, different types of crowds and audiences and countries and everything, you know.
Okay, so I love this game. Just top of mind, I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 10 years, 5 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time simply because there are millions
Okay.
of them. I understand that. I'm not, like I said, I'm
Okay.
not saying favorite, just the first five that come to mind. If you had to push play to
Okay.
five songs by other artists, what would those songs be and by whom?
Okay. I am for top of my mind is the two acts that I mentioned earlier on,
Yes.
Gang of Youths, an Aussie act that I am obsessed with. So I would probably put on, there's a song of theirs called The Heart Is a Muscle, which was probably the first song that I really got drawn into Gang of Youths for. It's just a great lyric, and it sounds great, and his voice is amazing. And then the National, I would pick. There's a song called "Don't Swallow the Cap," which I just think is amazing. It's really good live. They're a great band. They actually played in Ireland last weekend, but I didn't get to see them. But I've seen them before. My other big acts. I'm trying to think. Okay, some Irish music. Hozier is
Yes.
having an amazing couple of years.
Yeah.
He's brilliant, and I'm a big fan of his. And I think "Take Me to Church," especially, is just a classic. That a song that was a huge radio hit, and you wouldn't think it. He definitely didn't sit down to write a radio hit
Yeah.
because it sounded like nothing else on the radio at the time, and it was just a great song. So that's a song that definitely comes to mind. I always go back to old stuff as well. Fleetwood Mac is a band that I'm obsessed with, so I would say maybe "Dreams," beautiful Fleetwood Mac song. And let me think of maybe another Irish act, the Cranberries. A great Irish
Yeah.
rock band who really influenced me when I was younger. So yeah, I would pick maybe "Linger" by the Cranberries, which is a song that I sometimes play with. If I'm asked to sing a song in a pub, I'll sing "Linger" by the Cranberries. It's a beautiful song. So that's five. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. So, Danny, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a quick final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
I'd like to say hello. I'm Danny from the Coronas, and please check out our music. If you like indie rock from charming Irish hairy men, then you might like our music. You can check us out on thecoronas.net, and just be yourselves and be happy.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.